Good evening. You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, Kingston's campus and community radio station. We are broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, and it's 7 o'clock on January 11th, 2017. You can also find us online at cfrc.ca. This show is CFRC Prison Radio. We broadcast every Wednesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. on CFRC. We deal with prison issues and prioritize putting prisoners' voices on the air. Our signal reaches Collins Bay Institution, Millhaven, Bath, Joyceville, and Cape Vincent in upstate New York. And we have a really good show for you tonight. A couple interviews. One is one done about the Saskatchewan pen riot that happened last month in Saskatchewan, obviously. Really good interview, inside story, stuff that hasn't come out yet. The news has basically interviewed the head of the Correctional Officers Union and reproduced statements from CSC thus far. So we're really excited to have that out there. And we also have an interview from CKUT Prison Radio Show in Montreal. They did an interview with somebody in Winnipeg about a prison rideshare program that they're organizing there, which is a very cool interview. So I look forward to all that and hope you do too. But before we get to that, I should let you know about the show. The Calls from Home is our program that we do the last Wednesday of every month. On that show, we broadcast messages, letters, song requests, etc., from inside or outside, dedicated to people inside. Phone number for that setup is 613-329-2693. You can also email us if you have that at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. Find us online at cfrcprisonradio.wordpress.com or on Facebook. There's a group called Calls from Home that you can join. If you want to write us a letter, we always encourage that. You can write us at CFRC Prison Radio, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Kilo 7 Lima, 3 November 6. And if you want to call us live on the air tonight while we're playing our interviews, you can call us at 613-533-2372. That's 613-533-CFRC. First tonight, we have an announcement. Next Tuesday, January 17th at 6:30 p.m., there's an event called Fighting the Black Snake, Resisting Energy Mega Projects Across Turtle Island, which is a term for North America, an indigenous term for North America. That's Tuesday, January 17th at 6:30 p.m. The venue is AKA. They're located at 75 Queen Street at Wellington. The venue is wheelchair accessible. And this is the description of the event. From Lilu Island to Elsipuktuk to Standing Rock, oil and gas corporations are working hand in hand with government to extract fossil fuels and build new energy infrastructure. These mega projects poison land and water and destroy life. They're an expansion of the colonial regime and the capitalist economy. They require the ongoing dispossession of indigenous land by democratic consultation, or, when that fails to produce the desired result, by force. We're tired for calls for better environmental assessments, more safety measures, or more thorough consultation. What inspires us is the brave resistance of indigenous land defenders and water protectors across Turtle Island, and everyone who's fighting against energy extraction alongside them. Come to our info night for stories, short films, and dispatches from people resisting energy infrastructure across Turtle Island. Speakers include Dan Doreen of Tyendinaga, Bob Lovelace of Ardoc, and video contributions from Annie Clare of Elsipuktuk, Kanahus Manuel, and Dennis Burden from Port Hope Simpson. So that's next Tuesday, January 17th, 6:30 p.m., AKA, which is 75 Queen Street. So I would recommend you check that out. Let's go to some news. CSC Commissioner Don Head gave a presentation last month at an anti-drone conference in London, England. He spoke about the threat posed to federal prison security by unmanned aerial vehicles, which are increasingly being used for package drops. Since 2013, there have been 41 drone-related incidents at institutions across Canada, The second most frequent spot for that is Collins Bay Institution here in Kingston. He said CSC is currently working on drone detection and interception technologies. Also in the U.S., political prisoner and prisoner of war Jalil Muntasim has been in the secure handling unit for teaching what was a sanctioned Black History course in the prison he's in upstate New York, which included a discussion of the Black Panther Party. For more information on that and the things people are organizing to try to get him out, visit FreeJalil, that's JALIL.com. In local news, today marks the 202nd birthday of Sir John A. Macdonald, Canada's first Prime Minister and racist drunk who instituted starvation policies as Canada expanded west, hung Métis leader Louis Riel, and instituted the residential school system, understood by many as foregrounding the mass incarceration of Native people across Canada today. Interestingly, there was no birthday celebration this year after years of protest spearheaded by Idle No More here in Kingston. And today, actually, at the statue, there was a victory party. Also, on December 31st, there were New Year's Eve noise demos held at prisons and jails across the world. In this area, there were demonstrations in Hamilton, Niagara, and Montreal. We've done an earlier show about this. It's basically a demonstration, a noisy demonstration at a jail that is meant to express solidarity and connection with people inside, and there's fireworks and drums and all this kind of stuff. So actually, to give you an idea of what that sounds like, we have a clip from a noise demo that happened last year in New York City. So check this out. It's pretty cool. Yes, that was a footage from a New Year's Eve noise demo last year in New York City to give our listeners an idea of what that sounds like. And let's move on to our main story tonight. So on December 14th, 2016, a massive riot broke out at Saskatchewan Penitentiary, ostensibly triggered by a dispute over food portions in the medium security unit. According to news reports, more than 200 prisoners refused to lock up, and things quickly escalated from there. The guards fired their shotguns, injuring several prisoners. Prisoners wore masks, covered security cameras, erected barricades, set fires, and smashed windows, heat registers, and toilets. The unit was, according to the correctional investigator, completely destroyed and uninhabitable. In the melee, several prisoners were gassed, beaten, and shot by the emergency response team. And three prisoners were found stabbed, presumably by other prisoners. 43-year-old Jason Leonard Bird later died in hospital from his stab wounds. Prison radio in Kingston decided not to include any speculation about the reasons for that stabbing or a cause of death on our show tonight. We do offer our condolences to his family and friends. To get more information on what happened and caused this riot, we got in touch with Sherry. Sherry's a woman in Saskatchewan that runs two Facebook groups. One is a Canadian Prison Wives support group on Facebook, and the other is an advocacy group called Beyond Prison Walls Canada. Sherry has been in touch with prisoners who were present at the riot at Saskatchewan Pen, as well as their families, and she shared with us what happened.
So, yeah, my name's Sherry, and I have a Canadian Prison Wives support group and a Beyond Prison Walls Canada Facebook group. They both can be found on Facebook. And they just offer support to prison wives and families that are going through the tough time of incarceration. women just vent on there with issues they have. I mean, being a prison wife or even a mother of somebody who's in prison is not easy. So people, they vent their problems, and we just offer support. I think we're at about almost 100 members right now. And you can find anything on there from, if you just want to vent your story as to why your husband's upset or why the system sucks, because it does. A lot of stuff's going on with the prison riots. You have family that are in South Penn right now.
Maybe going back a little bit in terms of what kind of things have been happening, I understand that Saskatchewan Penn was the most complained about prison in Canada through the ombudsman. So what kind of stuff was going on? What was the situation leading up to the riot?
It was all over the food. They weren't giving the proper portion sizes. They were adding fillers to it, to their food. So they were starting to take, like, cornstarch or flour and mix it with water to add weight to the food. The portions weren't the right size, so the inmates got upset. 2 weeks before the riot, all the inmates decided to stop working, and there was actually social workers that were starting to work in the kitchen. Before, when they said they weren't going to work anymore, the guards came in and said, okay, well, we're going to put the guys from protective custody into the kitchen then. Well, the inmates said, no, they're not going to eat food served by anybody in protective custody. So they were going to go on a hunger strike. To get that far, that's why they brought the staff in, I guess, the social workers and that to cook. And then they had enough of doing that. So then there was a meeting that was called and nothing changed.
So was the strike across the entire penitentiary, or was it specifically in the kitchen? Do you know?
Actually, it started with, like, the kitchen, but I know that before they rioted, they said, okay, well, you know, if things don't change, we're not going to work the kitchen, we're not going to work the canteen, we're not going to do nothing. So then they were threatened with, okay, well, if you guys don't go to work and you guys don't start doing your stuff, they're going to take away their inmate social, which was, they have one just before Christmas, and they have, like, Santa there at Christmas time, and it's good. You know, they look forward to that. They were going to take that away from them. They were going to take their Christmas canteen, which they get extra stuff at Christmas time that they normally wouldn't get. Actually, they had threatened to even say, we're going to take all your canteen away from them. That's where, I guess, the inmate committee and staff and that decided, okay, they have another meeting, and nope, nothing's changed again. And then they just had enough with all their threats, and that's when that riot broke out. It was just chaos, because from what started as a peaceful protest led to the riot because the guards came in with guns.
Were there demands brought forward or negotiations that happened prior to that, or was it immediate conflict?
When it started just peaceful and they came in, they instantly announced their, I guess they have this over the speaker system, a prison riot code. When that riot act was done, he said it was like as the riot act was being read over the speakers, which most of the inmates didn't even hear it because the speakers were broken out there, the guards came in with their guns.
This was the refusal to lock up at lockup time, right? As a way to protest the food portions?
Right.
Okay. And so the guards came in, and what happened at that point?
They said that the inmates had made barricades, but they said that the guards were cutting them down with tools that you would use, like, in the jaws of life. And then they said the guards were shooting bullets at the floors, which then would ricochet and hit inmates. They sprayed their gas guns, which ended up having guys, I guess, pass out. They had inmates eventually lay in their cells with their hands behind their head and their faces down to the ground. And then they put the flashbangers, which are like a grenade, into these guys' cells. He had told me that on units E3 and 4, there was a hole shot into the floor and the inmates were getting shot at. And I guess the inmate I had talked to said that one of his friends got shot in the leg so bad that it tore a piece of his back leg off, and another one got shot in the knee, which took his kneecap and, like, wrecked his kneecap. He was sent to the hospital for that. The inmates were taken off the range, and a lot of them were sent to the hole, which is, like, solitary. The inmate I talked to said that there was about, probably 9 to 10 inmates in a cell. And they were left in there with no clothes, and some of them had no shoes, just blankets. Actually, some of them didn't even have that. They were just sitting on the cement floors. And I guess during the riot, the guards had smashed the inmates' TV and destroyed their clothes. I mean, yeah, the inmates did break stuff. But there is one unit where, yeah, like, the toilets were busted, the sinks were broken. There was actually, and I think it was from the guards shooting in the floor, that you could see into the other units below them. So inmates were jumping down through the floor, but the ceiling into the next unit. One of the inmates was shot and hit with a guard's billy stick so bad that they ended up breaking his forearm and a few fingers.
So you're saying that they actually broke through the floor and were able to move between units?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, when I talked to this inmate and then the other inmates I've had that sent me letters or, you know, sent me Facebook messages, not from prison, but from somebody they had talked to out in the community, they said this was, like, one of the rankest riots they've ever seen. It's definitely one for the books, is what their exact words were.
Yeah, it reminds me of some of the stories from the Kingston Pen Riot in 1971, which is a pretty infamous incident around here, but you don't hear about something of that scale happening very often.
It was just chaos. And then this inmate had told me that night of the riot, there were guys sent, oh God, there probably was about over 200 of them sent either to Saskpen Max, Edmonton Max, or Stony Mountain Max.
So if you're a family member of somebody in Prince Albert, say, or even Saskatoon, how far of a drive is that now to go see somebody?
Say about 10 hours, 8 to 10 hours now to drive from Prince Albert all the way to Winnipeg. So it created tension in there, and there are still some guys out there. I'm not too sure what the atmosphere is like out there because, you know, in Max, you only get scheduled phone calls. They're only at certain times. Haven't really heard much of what's going on there. But I know at Saskpen, last I heard, they're still locked up, the guys at Max. They've been on lockdown for 18 days.
Right through Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that's the way the CSC operates. They like to do that. And this is like what CSC does. They say they like to keep family close together. No, we don't. My fiance got switched from Saskatchewan to Alberta Institution, and I only seen him, you know, once every 3-4 months. And it was, for me, it was a 10-hour, almost an 8-hour drive. And, you know, a visit is expensive. That's what I'm saying. Like, some of these families now, they have to go 8 or 10 hours. Well, you got to get a hotel. A 2-day trip for me to go see him for, you know, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon, two times on a Friday and a Saturday was about $600 to $800. That's a little bit intense. That's almost what my rent is.
That's just to see somebody once every 3 to 4 months, too.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. And, like, this thing about taking these inmate socials away because they didn't want to go to work, that's something that they really strive. That's set up by the inmate committee. And these inmates are paying, you know, for the families to come. They charge a lot. Like, it's $20 a person, I think, to attend the social. And the food was just unbelievable. So, and that's why I say, like, the food that these inmates, I can see why they protest. The quality of meat, a lot of inmates have told me that since the food and everything's changed, like, you can't eat it. You have to down tons and tons of water just to get it down.
It sounds like there's been a buildup of tension kind of generally.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, and I mean, here in Saskatchewan, the complaining of the food is in the portion size, has been not just in the federal institutions, it's the provincial too. The food quality is awful. Then this is why so many of them have canteen and, you know, they're buying tons of food and they're like, you can buy in the inmate canteen, you can buy lots of stuff, but it's expensive. A small brick of cheese, for instance, that you would pay, you know, $4 for here in society, they're charged about $8 or $9 for it. It's sad. And then they took out things like, I don't know if you guys are familiar out there with like Corcan, where they were to bill stuff. Harper took that out, and that was the biggest mistake ever.
The incentive pay for Corcan work.
It's sad. And if you're not working, and a lot of them say, you know, why work? Because if I work, I have to pay rent. After I pay that and I pay all my, you know, my inmate fees and my phone and stuff like that, you have nothing left. I think he was left like $5 or $10. So what's the point of working, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like one of the only reasons left to work is because they will not give you parole if you don't.
Yes, and you know, one of the only reasons, other reasons to work is to get out of your cell. Because some places, like I know Drumheller for sure, if you work, you get out of your cell during the day. If you're not working, you're locked up and you don't get out except at lunch, and then you get out again at like 5 o'clock after supper. So otherwise, you're locked up all day. That's actually another thing with Saskpen, that the guys were saying that if they don't go to work, they weren't getting any of their living money. I think every day they get so much, even if they don't work, the guards were threatening to take all that away. So they wouldn't even have money for their phone. And that's what they do. Like, if you don't behave the way they want you to, they'll threaten you with something. And I think that's just where they give up and just, I don't care. I encourage their protests. For that, I was like, right on, good, do it again. They should do it.
The regional president of the Guards Union, James Bloomfield, made a claim to the media that the guards had saved a whole bunch of lives by sending in the emergency response team. What do you think about that?
So basically all that is a bunch of guards ready to fight because they have all their, you know, their guns and their sticks. And basically they're just like a SWAT team is what they are. A lot of the inmates call them the goon squads. They don't come in to do anything to save anybody. Just so that it looks good to the media or it looks good to people, they're ready just to basically whoop whoever's ass is in their way. And in this province, I mean, the system is completely racist towards Aboriginal people. When I was helping this inmate, Forrest Pelche, from a provincial institution, he had said, you know, I always find that Saskatchewan was a place that nobody cared. It was like the Canadian Louisiana or whatever. He says, you know, like, black people are the target in the States. Well, in Saskatchewan, it's Aboriginal people. They just don't care. And it's true.
I recently saw a CBC retrospective on the Kingston Pen riot in 1971, and they had some of the guys who were involved speaking and reflecting on it, and you could tell there was a mix of seriousness because it was you know, people got hurt and there was some heavy consequences faced by everybody involved, but there was definitely some pride in the fact that people stood up and made history and asserted themselves as human beings. Do you think this will be that kind of moment?
Yeah, I think it will be, because things like that, like, hopefully the correctional investigator looks into this quite a bit more and things get changed from it. There was a news reporter that was doing a bit on segregation. I found so many inmates when I told them that if you've been in SEG and you can talk without your name being revealed, or if you want to give me the information and I'll pass it on to the reporter, they had lots of people talk. And things change. I'm hoping things change. Like I say, you know, it takes time, but I think the ones that some of them just are to the point that they don't care anymore. Who knows what they say or anything? And just they got to do something to change the way things in there. Nothing gets better unless somebody stands up and takes a stance. And looks like somebody did it. Now all these people are in max, pretty much. And they know that it's probably going to get worse. The punishment that they're going to be in, a lot of them probably got institutional charges and, you know, things taken away, and it's going to involve them going to SAG in the hole. But I think for things like that, some of them just don't care. It's like, whatever. You know, they'll deal with it. A lot of them are pretty tough. I think they know the consequences before they actually do it, but I hope it changes for them.
And as far as you know, that nobody who is there has spoken on behalf of anybody or delivered a statement or anything like that yet?
Like, inmate-wise, no.
Yeah, like the inmate committee or any group or anything like that?
Nothing that I've known yet, but then again, like, the wives I know that have their husbands were already in max, they're just going based on what these guys that came from Medium have been telling them. And like, yeah, they're still on pretty much lockdown, and it's been about 18 days now. So they only get really taken out, I think, if they're lucky, for 1 hour a day, if that.
And what do you think happens next? What happens now?
Well, from my understanding, they're probably going to keep these guys in max, wherever they've been shipped to now, until they can repair that Medium security unit, because from my understanding, what everyone's saying is it's completely trashed. I think they're going to try and keep them in that SEG as long as they possibly can, because they don't care once they're there. And I mean, if they're all in SEG and they're locked up, you know, 23 hours a day, that's easier for the guards. They don't have all those inmates running around all day. Their job is a lot easier. They just sit there and do nothing. They only have to watch so many inmates because they only let so many of them out at one time. They're never in a rush to do anything. Like, actually, the day after the incident, I heard that they had no water out there, that they were using pretty much like porta potties as bathrooms. I'm curious to see what the correctional investigator is going to say or do, especially seeing that Sask Pen was one of the places that had, like you said, the most complaints. they just feel nothing gets addressed. And that's partially why that riot, why the protest started, was because they kept asking and bringing it up, and they weren't even being rude about it, but nothing was getting done. Nothing was being heard. It's like they just don't care. That's almost like what the image is. They don't care.
Everybody's heard about it now.
Oh, yes, and that is good. I mean, I'm not even working in my field. I have a justice degree, so if I can do one thing and be the voice of some of these inmates, by all means, because I'm not scared of what CSC is going to say to me.
And your group, did you say it was a Saskatchewan-specific group, or is it open to any wives?
It's open to anybody, yeah. It's Canadian Prison Wives. It's on Facebook. It's a closed group, the Prison Wives group, just because I've had people that seem to be, you know, sketchy, like guards or something. We always worry about that. So we don't let anybody in there because we don't want – it's private, you know. You know, people post stuff and people don't want to be known that they're a prison wife at all sometimes.
Yeah.
Keep it – it's closed. Nothing that gets posted on there, anybody else can see it. Some people don't post and they just message me or another admin and we do it that way. But I think we're close to almost 100 women now.
It sounds like a valuable source of staying in touch and mutual support.
Some of these wives, you know, if they're in different provinces, they help each other. I've actually had women in Alberta that they are living in the same city, you know, Edmonton or Calgary. They join up together and they go, you know, do stuff. They hang out together. Best thing, I was happy when I seen, you know, different wives hanging out together. You know, you see the pictures on Facebook, it's good because it kind of distracts them from the crappy life, because it's not an easy life. I honestly, having the background of CSC and prison from schooling and stuff, I don't know how any of these other women can handle it, because there's so much that's unknown. I don't see things, it's going to take a while for things to get better, and I don't think anything will get better until the CSC gets exposed, the whole system gets exposed to, hopefully the public cares. A lot of them, I know in Saskatchewan, this is a place that I don't think the public will ever care, not for a long time, until it hits one of their family. That's what I always say.
For the people listening in to this interview outside of Saskatchewan, what would you want to say to them?
You know what, for inmate-wise, if they have problems out there, definitely stand up and do something about it. You know, I never expected a riot like that scale to happen out in Saskatchewan. I mean, we're small, but definitely don't take the crap that they give. The only way change ever happens is if, you know, somebody stands up and does it. And chances are, there's a lot of guys who are fed up with the system anyway, and it just takes one person to kind of talk about it, encourage it. Eventually, it's got to get better. I'll help any inmate or any family out there. Send me your prison stuff. I'll take it to the media. I did that already with this guy. And the media wants this stuff. Anytime I go to the media and I'm like, yeah, I have actual prison documents of stuff that's going inside, oh, they want it. So don't think that people don't want to know what's going on in there. They do.
You've been listening to an interview with Sherry from Saskatchewan, who runs a prison wives support group on Facebook and an advocacy group called Beyond Prison Walls Canada. She got information from various prisoners who were present at the riot at Saskatchewan Pen. If you'd like to get in touch with her, you can write her at Beyond Prison Walls Canada, number 16, 2223 Victoria Avenue East, Regina, Saskatchewan, Sierra 4, November 6, Echo 4. We'll be back after a short break.
Anything lost can be found again except for time wasted. A vision without action is merely a dream. It's the action, it's the grind, it's the hustle, it's the persistence.
In the car while roaming around, all my thoughts been roaming around. Where I come from, like a hole in the ground, feeling me still holding it down. Every car pass by with the music going loud while bumping, roaming around. Telling me to make a hit, but I really don't get why they walked on roaming around.
Putting out my window, I see everything I dream about and wish I had. Out my window, I see everything I dream about and wish I had.
Ain't no sign of kicking, nothing, go sleeping, but I'm dreaming. Hustle, Muhammad Ali.
Gates.
Jab nasty, hook good, just like Muhammad Ali. Hold up, out the streets, they in the streets, all I can do is be nippy. With Flo Rida, nothing in common, I'm not a B.O.B. Hold up, hustle hard, I'm hands on, I'm a good guy that could transform. The time I ain't asked for, still sending mail through the hatch form. Different city within a city, more overcrowded than an ant form. Look, don't try this at home.
Out my window, I see everything I dream about and wish I had. Everything I dream about and wish I had. Hustle, 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 play, take it. Ain't no time to kick it. Nothing come from sleeping for a dream. Hustle, 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 ready, ready. That's my true religion. Nothing come from sleeping for a dream.
I be loaded, thanking a condo.
Jizzle, what?
Product over broken heart, but pray, but just hope I don't choke. What I'm smoking on, potent ocean grown, no cologne, I just rule.
Two-time convicted felon, dumb shit.
Yeah.
Get at this Luca Bryson right here talking, bitch, you know I got them rings. I'm a shooter with a shooter. Ooh. I ain't never pay for that.
Shout out.
Young Money wanna sign
shout
me.
Out.
My rap jacket too violent. Bread 101-100 gang, that's Draco and Miles.
Out my window, I see everything I dream about and wish I had.
I Wish I Had It by Kevin Gates. So I want to thank Sherry again for that great interview about what's going on in Saskatchewan. We're going to stay in touch with that and try to keep up with what's going on at the other institutions where people have been transferred. One of those institutions is Stony Mountain, just outside of Winnipeg. So we thought this would be a good fit tonight to share an interview that was done by CKUT Prison Radio Show in Montreal with the group Bar None, who is organizing a rideshare for various people who are visiting their loved ones and friends in jails and prisons in that area. So this is an interview with Stefan from the group Bar None in Winnipeg.
My name is Stefan Doucette. I'm one of the members of Bar None, and we one of the things we do is organize a prison rideshare for a prison visiting rideshare.
So first, do you want to talk about what the prison rideshare project is and where it's based and what prisons it goes to?
Sure. So the prison rideshare operates out of Winnipeg, and basically what it is we have a phone and an email, and we have a list of drivers, and people can, once they've booked a visit to the jail that they want to visit, they just get in touch with us, and we put out the information about the ride to our list of drivers, and then once we get a response, we connect the driver with the rider, and then we sort of let them go on their way. We have done so far visits to the Headingley Men's Jail, to the Stony Mountain Jail, and to Milner Ridge. And so Headingley is about 15 minutes west of the city. Stony Mountain is about 15 minutes north of the city, and Milner Ridge is about an hour northeast of the city. And that's what we've done so far, but we have sort of offered to give rides to the Headingley Women's Facility, which is really close to the city. It's maybe 5 minutes out of the city. And we've also kept it on the table to go to Brandon, which is about 2.5 hours from here, but we haven't done that yet.
When and how did the project get started?
About a year ago, maybe a little less than a year ago, people sort of formulated the project and started laying the groundwork for it. I wasn't part of the group at the time, so I can only sort of speak in the vaguest of terms about how it went down. But they they decided, let's organize a prison ride share. They did the sort of research and stuff that they needed to do. They applied for small grants from neighborhood associations in the sort of inner city, and got them. And then from there, it was sort of just like the logistical, you know, figuring out how to operate a rideshare, working out the kinks, and stuff like that.
How many people are involved in organizing the project?
7 or 8, I think. Yeah.
Okay. And
that's
how?
That's like the main, like, we're like the people who do like the phone rotation and like go to meetings and whatever. But then like we have a database of, or like a listserv of maybe like 40 or 50 drivers.
And how many people would you say have accessed the project as a resource so far?
I haven't counted in a while, but I think like we might have like 8 or 10 like regular people who are getting rides, you know, every week, every couple weeks, every month or whatever, depending on how often they can do that themselves. We've probably given rides to more like 20 or 25 people, I'm sort of guessing, over the course of the last like 9 months or so. Mm-hmm.
And am I getting it right if I'm thinking it's like you're emailing this listserv of people, those people are themselves planning a visit to the prison and so they can drive someone else there? Or is it like people are just drivers?
No.
And they go and they hang out and they wait for folks and then they drive them home?
That's it, yeah.
Okay.
The second one, yeah.
Okay.
So, no, I mean, like, that would make sense if people, like, tried to, like, pool their, or, like, yeah, coordinate or whatever, but, no, like, that's not the way that it's, like, meant to operate, although that would be totally fine, obviously, but, no, the drivers is like, just people who have a vehicle and have a bit of time, you know, every now and then to do a drive out. And like we use those grants that we get from the neighborhood associations allow us to pay back the drivers for their gas.
Mm-hmm.
And even like pitch in for a cup of coffee or whatever too during the ride.
I'm guessing, and I could be wrong, that a big part of this project ends up being like having conversations with folks when you're in the car with them on the way to the prison. Do you guys feel like it fits in with bigger parts of maybe like Bar None or like other projects in town to be like building relationships with folks who have family or loved ones in the prisons in the area?
In a sense, yeah. Like I think that's not necessarily like a too prescriptive because like, or I don't know if that's the right word, but like there's no like expectation of riders, you know, beyond like, you know, going to visit someone in jail, like, you know, you're getting a ride, that's it. Like,
mm-hmm.
And then anything beyond that, like, you know, maybe people will build relationships and then like people have, you know, I don't mean to say that they don't, but oftentimes like, I think people getting rides to jail will be seeing like a half dozen drivers, like different drivers over a period of 6 months, right? So, but like, so that happens in the rides. Like next week we're organizing like a summer barbecue so that people can sort of hang out outside the context of those rides. And it's not really like a one-on-one thing, but more of a like, getting to know each other and talking about the project together as a group and whatever.
And that will be like not just the 7 core members of the project, but also like people on the listserv and folks who are accessing the rides?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, people who are interested in it. It's kind of like whoever's welcome. Like it's, but yeah, it's mainly for those 3 groups of people. That's kind of how we like see the project in a way is like, they can cross over, like, you know, organizers are drivers and potentially people who get rides can become drivers too if they want and vice versa, whatever. But that's, we want to get those three groups together and sort of, you know, hang out, and but also get a chance to see each other in a different context.
Do you want to talk a bit about Bar None?
Yeah, sure. So Bar None is like, yeah, it's kind of hard to separate the two in a way, because like literally on the rideshare project is like, is what like keeps us meeting every 2 weeks, because we have, it is like a fair amount of work. But like the group came together out of Bar None, which like prior to organizing the rideshare, there was a group called Bar None, which maybe was like slightly different, but it was sort of trying to be a prisoner solidarity group that came out of the organizing that was done in Winnipeg to support the prisoners' work strike, the federal prisoners' work strike in like 2013 or whenever that was. And so after we did some like fundraising and support stuff for those striking prisoners, we tried to keep that momentum going and did a few things like on Prisoner Justice Day and whatever, fizzled out, and then it came back through this prison rideshare project. And we're an abolitionist group in terms of our politics. That's kind of what brings us together in a way. And so like the rideshare project is a thing that we do because it because it's like valuable to people and sort of fulfilled, or like sort of trying to address a gap, I guess, but it's a gap that like cannot be filled in terms of maintaining relationships with people on the inside. There will never be enough rideshares to get people to visit the people that they love who are in jail. So it's, I guess, like a partly a youth thing and partly critique. And so, yeah, we do that, but also we try and make sure that we're staying accountable to our principles of abolition, I guess, which is, you know, kind of a struggle when you're doing something day to day like the rideshare. But, you know, it's something that we pay attention to and that we keep in our conversations and at our meetings and stuff like that.
Man, I'm going to come back to this. I have like questions about doing like abolition work and also doing something that could be conceived of as service provision and like how to think through that kind of stuff, but I'll come back to it. I have a question about like the context of prison in Winnipeg. Like, can you talk a bit about, you know, who ends up in prison? How long do people seem to end up inside for? Is it like mostly folks in provincial, mostly folks in federal? Like what kind of, what's your sense of like what the context is of prison and folks who end up in prison in Winnipeg?
Well, I don't have like a super clear picture, to be honest. I'm not, well, A, I'm not from Winnipeg, and B, I'm not from like a criminalized community. And so there's not really anyone in my family that's been to jail. And like, I see it through like the like paid work that I do, which is at a sort of social service thing for folks living with FASD, but and like through whatever other organizing and stuff outside of Bar None. But I guess like in Winnipeg, you have like anywhere you know, criminalized Indigenous and Black communities, and the remand center is always overfilled, and they're trying to build more provincial jail cells currently. I think, like, mainly the prison population is provincial in Manitoba. There's, like, a few provincial jails, and I think that I'm pretty sure that Stony Mountain is the only federal one. Sorry, what was the rest of your question?
I think you answered most of it. I was just curious about the, like who ends up in prison in Winnipeg, and, like, how does that impact the choices that you guys make around who you organize with and who ends up getting rides and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, definitely we... It's... Like, I forget what the figures are. We have them sort of, like, on our website, like, but the majority of people doing time in, or like a disproportionate amount of people doing time in men's jails are Indigenous, and it's like even worse proportions for Indigenous women, or for women in terms of, yeah, like it's almost all Indigenous women in the women's jails here.
Does Bar None connect with, like, are there other resources for prisoners and their families in the Winnipeg area? How does Bar None and the, like, Rideshare Project interact with other kinds of resources and services that people could have access to?
We don't have too many, like, really super official, like, prison service provider, like, partners. Like, it's funny, like people will be like, oh, Prison Rideshare, that's dope. Like, there was, like, I think, like, someone put up our poster inside of the Stony Mountain library. So, like, the prisoners there were seeing our phone number because someone who worked at Stony Mountain, like, thought that it was a good thing. And then, like, John Howard and Elizabeth Fry are, like, supportive, but we don't have, like, official any kind of partnerships with them. And we've done some fundraising in concert and collaboration with the Manitoba Library Association's Prison Library Project, where they're, like, in a way similarly to us, like, filling a gap where the prison libraries are just total bullcrap, and so they're stepping in to bring, like, more quality books and books that people inside are actually asking for and stuff like that. So we've worked with them in terms of fundraising. But, yeah, like, we don't have any, like, official partners other than, like, getting the funding from a couple of different neighborhood associations.
Do you feel like there's a difference between, and if so, like, what's the difference between offering rides to the prison as, like, a grassroots abolitionist group versus, like, other types of, you know, EFRI or, like, John Howard type services that people can access in the city? Like, what feels like the difference between those ways of going about organizing to you?
To be honest, I haven't really done too much, like, I don't really know too much about John Howard and EFRI, and, like, so I can't, like, really compare and contrast too much. But one thing that we try and do is keep abolition at the forefront when we discuss our project, I guess. That's, like, one main difference, is, like, that we can be, like, completely political as much as we want. And that doesn't necessarily look like much to someone who's just calling to get rides or just offering rides, but that's something that we're, you know, talking more about as we like get more comfortable with the rideshare part, because to be honest, like, it is, like, really just starting. So trying to figure out ways to keep those politics front and center within the project is, like, definitely an ongoing question. In terms of, like, how it's not a social service, like, that was definitely a big question from the beginning, like since before I joined the group. And so we'd like talk about that fairly regularly. I'm trying to think of like how that we're thinking through it. Like we are trying, like it's complicated also because of the way that, or it's not complicated, but the people who like are going to jail and from criminalized communities are often people who've dealt with sort of service providers so much. And so like making that contrast, like, yo, this is up to you or whatever. Like you can, like, you don't owe us anything. like we're not policing you, whatever. It's like an ongoing conversation, but it's definitely not like resolved at all.
Do you want to talk a bit about plans for the future of this project?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have too many. We're just sort of like, we want to continue doing this. We'll see if we continue getting funding for it. I don't think that not getting funding would stop us, but it might change how it looks a little bit because of how much gas costs and how the jails are sometimes pretty far away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we want to sort of grow the network for sure so that more and more people can access it. But like I said earlier, like there's no way to fill that gap. It's like an inherent gap, and jails wouldn't exist if they didn't want to separate people. So so we're aware of that. Meanwhile, like I think that people do want to see their families and their friends and whatever. So it's good to make sure that the most people as possible know about it and have access to it. And yeah, maybe just like I guess like a goal would be to make sure that people who are taking part in the project can take more and more ownership over it, and it won't be as separated between organizers and drivers and riders, maybe. And I don't know, in terms of bar none projects other than the prison rideshare, we've talked about actually doing a prison radio show also, because although the community station does not reach any of the out-of-town jails, people in the remand can get the community radio station here at CKW. So, and there has been like sort of special programming for them inside, like on Christmas and Prisoner Justice Day in years past, so we might get around to that. But I guess we just got a lot of figuring out to do.
That was an interview with Stefan from Bar None in Winnipeg, done by CKUT's Prison Radio Show. Thanks very much to them for sharing that with us. We're out of time for tonight. If you want to find more about Bar None, go to barnunblog.wordpress.com. If you want to get in touch with us, you can always email us at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net, find us online at cfrcprisonradio.wordpress.com, or write us a letter, CFRC Prison Radio, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Kilo 7 Lima, 3 November 6. We're going to end with a song by Propagandhi called Bringer of Greater Things, which they dedicated to Rodney Nastis, Neil Stonechild, and Lawrence Wagner, who were all killed by the Saskatoon Police Department during the quote-unquote Starlight Tours episodes in the 90s and the 2000s, and perhaps even up until today, where people would be driven outside the city and left to freeze to death. So this is Bringer of Greater Things by Propagandhi, and we'll see you next week, Wednesday at 7 p.m. Have a good night.
Embrace this parody, the ending of things you can't. keep you warm.